real stand-up dude. Also happens to be a police officer and a person of color. And there lies what most people see, a very interesting intersection of identities. With that, there's a very unique perspective on some of the things that are going on in today's society. So with that being said, I will start right off the top. I feel like just because I've known you the longest, I can ask you some of the harder questions, and you know
I'm
it fits
open
within
book
the
today,
context.
so if anybody has anything to ask me, I'll do my best to answer as candid as I can. And yeah, I want to contribute to this conversation. There's nothing that I'm really nervous about discussing or covering, so let's get
Okay.
into it.
What was your initial reaction when you heard of the news of George Floyd and his passing?
So I actually was just scrolling on Instagram. I think I was working night shift, and I was just waking up sometime middle of the day, and I was just scrolling on Instagram after lying in bed, and I just saw this video from Sean King. And normally, like, you know the type of content that Sean King posts. So sometimes I actually do skip by it because sometimes it's just a lot to take in over and over, but for some reason, and I normally don't even read the captions right away either. It's kind of from the look. Then I started watching this video, and in that video, it kind of gets right into these cops, right on this guy's neck, and people are yelling. So right away, I'm just this can't be good. And watch that video, still in bed, and just like li literally felt like sick. I was confused. I was like, what did I actually just watch somebody die on Instagram? Confused how this wasn't even like filtered out, because normally stuff like that, you don't see somebody getting hurt like that on social media. So I was happy that it was there. I was happy that I saw a lot of views on it. I'm happy that I saw a lot of comments on it. But I was just like, what did I just see? And it took me a while to process it. Then reading the rest of the caption, learning that he passed away, I was like, that ain't right. And just a lot of different emotions, a lot of different emotions. It was weird. It was very weird. It was very weird. Very heartbreaking. Feel horrible that a man had to go out like that. That anybody had to go out like that. Let alone another, a black man. What we've seen in history the last like 8 years. There's been a lot going on in our community. So yeah, man.
I think my next question is, like, since those events, I feel like tensions between the African American community and police have been quite high. Have you noticed that within your line of work?
Not particularly. I have one of my buddies over today, and I was talking to him, just letting him know, like, work really hasn't been too different for me. There was a protest in Kitchener on Wednesday afternoon. I wasn't working at the time, so I wasn't able to be there in a uniform capacity. I didn't go eat before either, just because I was working and the time wouldn't line up. But there's not a huge black population in Waterloo that I see. There's a certain area that we go to where there is more black people, but as a whole, not really. There's been a lot of support in on when you drive to communities. A lot of people have Black Lives Matters signs. Just like with COVID, there was a sign that say our heroes wear scrubs. There's more Black Lives Matter stuff, as well as those signs there too. So it's nice to see that sort of support. But it hasn't really been super tense where people are like, how are you a black cop? Huh? Like, how can you be a cop and be black? I haven't had really that conversation. At least not an articulate conversation. I've had some ones where the conversation was kind of talking to a wall, but those conversations aren't happening too much with me.
And what made you want to be a cop? Like, from like what I remember, like a while back, you were an HR manager, you were killing it, making tons of money, then you switched over and said, I want to be a cop. What happened? what made you want to choose this profession?
I'm not one of those people where it's been like my lifelong dream to do it. It's always been an inkling in the back of my head. As a kid, my mom would always say, you know, if you see a police officer, go say hi. And she'd always push me to have those interactions. But I realized like I didn't really like what I was doing. I was in staffing, recruiting, same thing. We're getting people jobs, and I was realizing the work really wasn't super meaningful. I get people these like general labor, factory type jobs where it helps some people, but for the most part, it's these companies needing to get cheap labor to have their product go out. And a lot of that just kind of wasn't something that I really wanted to do. I didn't want to be behind a desk, picking up the phone 100, 200 times a day, calling people, offering them, selling them a job that I didn't believe in. But it was a great experience for me because I learned what I didn't want to do. I knew that I wanted to be out in the public, moving around, talking to people. As you know, I love to talk to people. We're two sides of the same coin. We're very vocal with people, and we like to, you know, be out there. And I going through different jobs in my head, kind of like in grade school, the career cruising, just kind of thinking of different things that I could do. Then I reached out to a couple old football coaches that happened to be police officers and asked them about their experience. They got me very excited very quickly. And then I said, you know, let me take the plunge. Let me see if I got what it takes to do the job. And one thing led to another, and they gave me a uniform.
That's good. That's good. I'm going to ask one last question. I really want to open it up. Yeah. BPR is super informal, so for all our newcomers.
Yeah.
I also want to mention that, like, I know some people are shooting stuff for the Hamilton Arts Awards, so that's why our numbers are a little down today. But, again, let's be vocal. If you have questions, let's ask them. I think I'll start off by asking a hard question. Again, just because you know the context, you my boy from time.
Yeah.
I saw this quote on Instagram that said, there's no such thing as a good cop in a corrupt system. What's your response to a quote like that?
That's an interesting quote. I don't agree with that whatsoever, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, just based off myself, I consider myself a good cop. I consider myself someone that wants to help people. I look at people that I'm close with, that I work with, like my coach officer, he's a good cop. He's someone that instilled a lot of, use leniency, use discretion when you can in all situations. I remember early on, I pulled over a guy for speeding, and it ended up being a professor doing a lecture at the University of Waterloo from Toronto. And just being new, I'm thinking, I got to give a ticket. I got to show my coach that I'm willing to give tickets. I got to show them that I can do this job. I know what I'm doing. And as I'm like pulling up the software to do it, he's just like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, you know, I'm going to give him a ticket." He's like, "Why? Like, was he really speeding like that fast?" He wasn't. I think he was going like maybe a 20 over in like a 50 zone. But it's just like, think about it. This is a university professor coming to do a lecture here. What is his impression going to be on Waterloo police if he has no previous convictions for traffic offenses, and you're just giving him one because he was late to getting to this meeting? So there's stuff like that where it's teaching me to be tolerant and think about the bigger picture, than rather than just like, you found an offense, you lay the charge. There's more to it than that. I remember early on when I would pull people over, I would never ask them where they're going or like where they're coming from. And I just kind of say like license, registration, ownership. And every time we got back in the car, he'd be like, "Hey, where are they going?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I don't know." He's like, "Well, maybe they're going to the hospital. Maybe their mom's sick," stuff like that. So I think that quote comes from a place of anger, comes from a place of confusion, comes from a place of ignorance. Because when I look around with the people that I work with and other police services, I would say that here in Canada, 98, 99% of the cops here are good for the most part. In every profession, every career, there's going to be rotten apples. People are people. People have their own desires, choices that they want to follow out. But for the most part, and just like in most things, there is a majority good people. And then in a corrupt system, all you can do is try to make changes when you can, try to be lead by example, and not always by, you know, being that speakerphone. Sometimes you just have to do the right thing and hope people see it. When people are willing to have conversations and are open up conversations, have those conversations, I'll shy away from those things. But it's the police organizations everywhere. They follow the same structure. It's 95% non people of color. Maybe less now. I just know I don't see a lot of people of color. And me being in this role, I'm hoping that eventually I can have conversations to start to make change just from being who I am in the uniform.
So if there's, 98% decent cops in Canada, my experience with the police has been, I guess, the inverse, 98% not good. And if 95% of the force is not people of color, and we know things that things such as racism, systemic racism, white privilege, discrimination, prejudice, etc., exists. Not saying that someone is intentionally doing these things, but people are born with these things and raised with these things.
For sure.
How does this sort of concept of 98% good cop fly when most of 98% of my experiences have been less than good?
All right. So there's a couple questions within that. I got a couple answers as you're going that I want to say. So everybody has implicit biases. In our training, we have training on implicit biases. And I'm not here to be a showpiece for the training that we get, but it is conversations that we have, and it's stuff that we have to re-qualify on every single year. So people are going to go into, you're going to step into uniform with whatever implicit biases they have, whatever stresses they have. We're all human beings. Sometimes you bring your outside life into your work. Everybody does it in their jobs. And sometimes that ends up being within an interaction you have with somebody. You might have just come from a call, and not to justify anyone's behavior or any mistreatment that you've had, but just another perspective on it. You might have come from a domestic violence call where somebody, really hurt somebody really bad, and, you know, you're bubbling. Then after you have a traffic stop with someone and you sense that they're giving you attitude, so you kind of give attitude back. You play a little catty. Everybody's human and everyone has their own reactions. I don't know the extent of what bad interactions that you've had with people, but when I say that I think that number of bad, mind you, that's my own personal number. That's not StatsCan or anything like that. It's just the people that I've worked with and I've been around that I've seen handle situations that, even if somebody is getting super hostile or aggressive, we have all these different tools on our body. We have all these different things at our disposal. But a lot of the times I've seen people just say, hey, we're just going to slow this down. This person is wilding out. Let's take a second and think about the best way that we can handle it.
Right.
Not so, just jumping into something and saying, like, we got to deal with this now and, you know, end this right now.
Now, you know, I let's say I'm having a bad day or something happens at my house and I'm rude to the clerk at 7-Eleven. If the brain surgeon is having a bad day at their house and they start working on my brain, attitudinal behavior shift might end me up dead. And I think that there's some jobs in which I wonder what the training is like, because I feel like some jobs shouldn't allow for that kind of stuff, for your personal life or your, you know, implicit bias to affect the outcome of your work or the production of your work.
Nah, I completely agree. And for the most part, people I've seen are always level-headed. It's so hard to speak on people's, what you felt might've been mistreatment. If I was in that situation, I might not even look at that as mistreatment. I might say we had a disagreement. I yelled at him. He yelled at me, and that's it. That's my own impression of the situation. So I completely understand that. If you had a fight with your wife, you shouldn't come to work being mad at every single person that you deal with. You need to check yourself. You need to put that away. But all I was saying with that point is we are humans too. And I don't know the extent of those interactions, but sometimes things that simple situations end up being a bit more than that, just because of the human element to what we do. With a lot of people disliking cops, people automatically come at us in an aggressive way a lot of the time. And it's just like, I'm here to have a conversation with you. Your girl, what's going on? But you're at me just because I'm in this uniform and not wanting to be a participant in whatever. If I have to talk to you, you're already trying to do everything you can not to talk to me or make it as difficult as possible. I'm a human. That's going to get annoying. I have a job to do to figure out what's going on. So that's just my answer.
I want to follow up on what Ian said. You have admitted that it is a corrupt system, and you know, you're trying to work you're trying to do good from the inside. Let's just put this from another profession, okay? Yep. Let's say we had a doctor who was killing patients and getting away with it. No type of repercussion whatsoever, okay? Would you just be another doctor just healing your patients?
You wouldn't
just be a doctor who is just working on your own patients and trying to be a good doctor to your own patients, right?
Sorry, could you maybe repeat the question or the scenario?
Okay, so can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah, yeah. It was just, okay. I think, the order.
Okay. Okay, so I'll explain the scenario again, right? So let's say you have a doctor, okay, who is, you know, doing surgery and killing his patients, okay? Mm-hmm. He's killing his patients and he's getting away with it without repercussion.
Okay.
Then you have another doctor who's a good doctor who's aware of these killings and, you know, in his own efforts or their own efforts is to be a good doctor by healing their own patients.
Yep.
Do you think that that's the right thing to do, or should they be taking action against these corrupt officers or corrupt doctors?
Okay. And so what action are you looking for to be taken?
But that's what I'm asking you. What action are you taking as a good officer besides just doing your regular job? And my point is that...
This is the thing that people...
Hold on, let me finish my sentence, please.
Okay.
My point is that there shouldn't be a difference between a good cop or a bad cop. You should be doing your job. You've never heard anybody say a good firefighter versus a bad firefighter. No, they do their job.
I have, but I'm in a different line.
They're good teachers and bad teachers. There's good.
But none of them are resulting in people's deaths. None of them are murdering people.
A lot of people have unrealistic expectations of everybody. Everybody thinks that everyone should be going right up to the chief and saying this, this, and this, and this. Where that's not the situation. That's not what's being.
And why isn't that? I don't understand why that isn't.
Also, a lot of people equate what's happening in the States with what's happening up here. The cops in the States and the cops down here are very, very different. You can just look at the statistics that show that fact. A lot of people's rage and outrage comes from being mad at cops down in the States and thinking that we're all the same people. I don't know what sort of training that they get. Our training is different than what they get. I don't know what vetting that they do to hire their cops. I don't even know all the different use of force options that they carry on them.
Is the training national?
Provincial. So you go to the Ontario Police College.
Right.
I have someone that just raised their hand. Jewel, you had a statement?
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to touch point because the term training is coming up a lot.
Yep.
And I think I guess the question I had, because I want to circle back to something that Ian had touched on earlier. Yep. About separating your personal life from your profession.
Yep.
My question is, do you feel as if the training that you receive is adequate, one? And then two, is there any kind of importance highlighted on the fact that it's very key for us to separate your personal life from your professional life.
Yes. So to answer the former first, yeah, that is definitely talked about. Even when we're learning about our use of force training, from going from like hands-on at someone to thinking about using a taser and everything else that we have. In all the training we get, it's you have to understand where you're coming from and handle it appropriately. If you're in a situation where you know that it can escalate you, slow it down, take a step back. We have all the time in the world. I have all the resources that I have in terms of my platoon. If I think that something's gonna get blown way out of proportion, I'm gonna separate myself from it. I'm gonna take a second and I'm gonna ask for additional help, whether that's being a supervisor, other constables, the different things we have at our disposal, whether it's mental health workers. I know that I will take a second back and think, how can I end the situation as calmly as possible?
Okay.
Now to your first question, that was, is the training adequate?
Yeah.
Is that correct? In some things, the training is not perfect. I've tried to think of ways to improve it, and I struggle with that. I think that's also me being a new officer, not being in every single situation. Right. I know that a lot of the training comes on the job. In the police college, there's only so many scenarios that they can throw at you. There's only so many times that you can do something. But that's why we have the coach officers. So when you get to the road, they're not just sending you to the road. You have a coach that is first showing you what to do, then helping you do it, then letting you do it, and that process. So it's ongoing training. I've been doing this job for almost 2 years, and I know that even my last block of 5 shifts, I've learned something new that I didn't know before that. And that's the way it goes pretty much every single shift. Anytime you get a new call, you get another thing to add to your Rolodex. Okay, I've handled this now. And or you've handled it another way before, and then you handle it this way. You're like, okay, like, let's look at the differences here. Maybe.
Right. You know,
yeah.
So the reason I wanted to bring that up, because I feel like a lot of frustration comes in. I can only speak from my personal perspective, but a lot of times when I see the police handling situations, a lot of scenarios might be very similar across the board, but the way that they're handled is drastically different. So I think my frustration or confusion comes in is that if everyone's getting the same type of training, are the police relying on their training, or are they using their judgment in the moment? And if that is the case, then I feel like we are susceptible to using our human bias. We're susceptible to using the external influence and bring in some of the baggage from our own personal lives onto the job. And that's what can end up clouding people's judgment in the heat of the moment when they're handling scenarios and situations.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to ask to see if we, one, feel that the training is adequate, and two, if it even touches on the importance of making sure we're leaving personal bias and our own individual experiences outside of the job. Because as someone who had to work in the community with children, it didn't matter what I was dealing with in the day. As soon as I stepped into my place of work, my focus had to be on taking care of other people's children. Yep. And it didn't matter how bad of a day I had or how bad of a day other people had that I was working with. There was a standard expectation. And if that standard expectation was not being met, there were consequences.
Yep.
And I feel like a lot of the frustration is that people can apply this concept in jobs that are not life and death scenarios. And the people who are in those positions where it's a lot of times life and death, it shouldn't even have to be life and death scenarios, are having things escalate to that point. Because they're not relying on the training that they received, and they're rather deciding to use their better judgment or their years of experience that they have under their belt.
Yep.
So that's kind of why I wanted to ask those questions and kind of highlight that as well too.
But even going back to like your statement, have you, in that job, you're saying that you've never once deviated outside of that professional, like you, that model that you're setting?
No, because if there was consequences I would have faced. So what happened was, if there was a time where my personal life was just so overwhelming, I couldn't do my job, I was incapable of functioning at the level of performance that we were expected to function at, there were then outlets that were safe spaces for us to go to as employees and staff, where the people we were serving were not going to be affected. And that's the kind of establishment that we had set up in place. So I know it might be a little bit different for police officers when you're in the heat of the moment or in this, you know, like if you're dealing with certain scenarios at the time. Yeah. But even somebody who has like a part-time community job, when we're dealing with the safety of other people's children, if my kind of place of work can think through all those different scenarios and think through all those precautions, then I think my personal frustration is that some, like the police, you know what I mean, who's there to serve and protect, should be more than capable of doing that. They should have more than enough resources to be able to do that. Yep. And I don't see why we are seeing so many different situations that look so similar but are played out very differently, because it seems like, again, police officers are left to use their judgment instead of the training that they should have been receiving.
Well, a lot of the time, or not most of the time, we have a lot of information on people ahead of time. So if we're going to a call where it's to say Jimmy, and Jimmy's a prolific offender, we know that he has assaulted police, we know that he carries weapons, we know all these things, we're going to go into that situation different than we're going to go into it with a guy that has 3 speeding tickets. We're going to go up with our guard up, right? Just as anybody would. We want to go into this situation making sure that we're being safe, that everyone around us is being safe, and that we can handle the situation and deal with it as safely as possible. So even within your training, your judgments are stuff that how I perceive a situation is going to be different than how my partner perceives a situation. Right. I'm a large black dude. I am 6'1", 250 pounds. I work with people that are very, very different. They can handle a situation very differently than me. In a situation where they may think that somebody may need to be tasered because they're being very assaultive, I would go into that situation thinking, I don't need to use my taser. I can go hands-on the person and deal with it that way. You get what I'm saying? So, and people don't agree with that, but if I'm working with a female officer who is 120 pounds and she's 5'4", and a guy my size is rushing at her, I don't expect her to go hands-on with this person. It's not realistic.
Right.
But if someone's rushing at me that way, I might think, you know what, I don't need to use my taser here. I don't need to use my options. I can go hands-on with this person and deal with it.
Right. So, and I think that is a good use of, or a better use of your judgment in those types of situations. However, to refer back to the point you made earlier about the person who you have previous information about, when you're, you know, with them having previous assault charges, when, you know, is known to carry a weapon. Again, the frustration to the public eye is that the way you handle that person who is Jimmy versus the way you handle the person who only has 3 speeding tickets doesn't seem to be that much of a difference.
Mm.
And I think that's where people's frustration comes in. Because now my question would be like, okay, if, you know, Officer Jeremy could know that he didn't need to be so aggressive with this person, how come Officer Harris can't have that same approach? Why did the two scenarios turn out almost identical, right? And then we look at the common denominator and we know that it's, you know, it's a black man.
And do we assume that, you know, if someone has background information about someone, so-and-so is potentially dangerous, so you're going into a scenario sort of prepared for certain reactions or behaviors, is there a perspective within the police force that the black male, the black woman, is potentially more aggressive than their white or non-person of color counterparts?
And this is a funny thing. Not that I've noticed, and not in my training, no officer that I've been working with where we're going to a hostile black person that, you know, might have been involved in a domestic or something, they're not saying, oh, you know, be careful, you know, this black guy, blah, blah, blah. And why I say it's interesting is because they wouldn't say that to me, right? It's just common sense. They wouldn't say that to me. So I don't know what they're thinking. I haven't seen any actions for them to show me that that is what they're thinking and that's their behavior. But like I said, it's interesting because common sense, they're not going to say that to me. They don't want to be perceived as a bigot, a racist, have a bias. They don't want to do that because then they know that when I'm working with them, I'm looking at them left, and I would look at them left and I would check them on that. But nothing like that has happened to me. Those sort of people that we know that have like multiple like assault charges and known carry weapon, what weapons charges, all that sort of stuff. As soon as someone gets dispatched to like that sort of call, one, even if you're on a traffic stop, if you're on another call, if you're finishing notes, most people are going to say, I'll clear, I'll back them. And when you're there, it's like, okay, I can advise. We're not needed. Situation's calm. Everyone else can slow down, go back to what they're doing. But most people, if they know it's a heated situation, we're gonna send multiple cars because we want to be able to handle this. There's strength in numbers. People think the optics on having a lot of cops there looks bad. Why are there so many cops to deal with this person? It's because the more people that we have to deal with it, the smoother that can go, right? It just makes sense. We want to outnumber them so we can handle it. That's what we want to do. I don't know if that answers your question or if you have a further question to that.
Ian, you're muted. Okay. So a bunch of people have been using the raise hand feature, which is really, really great. I thank everyone for their patience. So Lady M has a follow-up question. Then we're going with Elizabeth.
Amani had one, and too.
Pardon?
Earlier. Amani had one, too, earlier. But...
Yeah, Amani, and then Amani. Actually, Liz, just because you have access to Jeremy, we're going to go Amani. For those of you who don't know, Elizabeth's my sister. And then we're going to go Amani. So it's Lady M, Amani, Elizabeth. So Lady M, take it away.
Thank you. Okay. So, and it is definitely hard to not be emotional about these things, especially when you see somebody who could be your brother, your father, you know, in any way.
Yep.
So, I think for me, like, I guess as a side question is, at what point would you turn in your badge? I get this is a personal question, but I'm just asking for you, like, since you are a Black cop, there's a sort of intersectionality for you.
Yeah.
And obviously your coworkers wouldn't say to your face, like, oh, you know, like, Black people are the most violent, you know, they wouldn't say that to you, obviously.
For sure, right?
Yeah. So what is that intersectionality really like for you? And at what point would you turn your badge knowing that you are part of a corrupt organization?
Okay. So at the first things first, I am Black. I am Black first. I will always be Black first. If I'm not a police officer, when I take my uniform off and I leave, as soon as I drive off that lot, I am a Black man in the community. I'll always be Black, and I'm proud to be Black, and I'm proud to be a Black police officer because there's not a lot of us. It would have to take probably, I don't know. I haven't had that thought where I've come up with an answer saying that, you know, six people have to be killed, one person has to be, you know, and I'm not trying to clown or make light of it. I'm just trying to say that I haven't thought of it to that level. I think that question is way too deep, and I think it's going to be in the situation, do I want to be a part of this organization anymore? Yes or mm-hmm. no? I know that I'm making so, – go ahead.
The two-part question of that is, like, yeah, you are a Black man. When you take off your badge, you're no longer a police officer. So are you ever in a situation –
You're cutting where, in and out. You might have to repeat your question.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So it has, you know, if you had children, like how, or even you yourself, yourself driving down a street, are you ever conscious or do you ever feel in some type of way like, oh, I need to be careful about turning the signal or running a red light? Or do you think you now have privilege because you do have friends that are in?
Well, okay, definitely I'm less scared of cops now, 100%. But same time, when I do drive past a cop, my heart does just kick up. Whether it's even the Waterloo cars, the same cars that I drive, when I drive past another cop, my heart always kicks up. It's a natural reaction. I've had conversations with even other white cops that are saying, that shared their stories of them speeding and they saw a cop and they're like, oh, crap, I'm about to get bagged. Like, people are scared of cops. And we go into situations knowing that people are scared of cops, right? It's not like it's a hidden thing. People are scared of cops.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not as scared of cops because I look at myself and I'm like, okay, if there's cops like me that are hired. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm the majority like me, the minority like me. I don't know. I'm talking not in terms of Black or white. I'm just talking about character wise.
Mm-hmm.
I have less animosity or anxiety when dealing with cops. I've been pulled over since being a cop, and I have a conversation with them. They want my documents. Okay. I'm not gonna, I'm not gonna argue with them, because most of the time when you do something wrong, you know you did something wrong, especially on traffic stuff. But people, I didn't do it. And it's like my job is to watch the streets. My job is to watch you. I saw you do something. I've never once pulled over somebody for the sake of pulling someone over. I never pulled over someone because they look shady, because they're, you know, drive past me doing this. If you drive past me and you do something like that, I will I'll go behind you and I'll run your plate. And I'm curious. You made me curious. Why are you hiding yourself from me? But if I run your plate and there's nothing wrong, then I'm just going to drive past you. And that's it.
Okay. Just so these are my last follow-up questions. I definitely hear you, like, you know, those things weren't. But the other part of it is that there's no way running a red light should escalate to that point. And you've already touched on that, that, you know, it's different whether it's provincially or whatnot. But I think we have to be very careful about saying that these things don't happen in Canada, because they do.
But I wasn't saying they don't happen. I'm saying the frequency. A lot of people's outrage is from stuff that they're seeing on social media, and what's being posted on social media is a majority American police. It is a majority American police. What happened in Toronto the other last week or so with that lady in the balcony, incredibly unfortunate. But I can't think, and this is just me personally, of a time where I've seen something equivalent to what's happening in the States with a cop up here.
And Sammy, your team? Sammy, your team?
The one on the subway?
On the streetcar?
On the streetcar, yeah.
Yeah, that guy's a clown. And that guy deserves to be thrown under the jail. And I have no problem saying that. Even the judge said the first two shots or three shots within the use of force model, they were acceptable. After that, you went left. You went left, and it's super unacceptable. And now, this is my opinion on that. The first shot didn't even need to happen. Everybody's off the streetcar. The guy's on the thing with a knife. We have all the time in the world. You want to stay there? You're going to get sleepy. You're going to get hungry. Eventually, you're going to have to come out. That officer did not need to go on and aggravate that situation. And that's some of the messaging that we've been taught, even at the police college. That is that saying. Slow things down. Take a second. How can we handle this without everybody going home? I want to go home to my fiance every night. That's my goal. No matter the situation. I've been on calls where guns were involved. At the end of the day, I am going to go home to my fiance. And that's not me saying I'm going to take somebody else out. That's me saying I'm going to be thoughtful in how I approach this to make sure that I'm safe, my coworkers are safe, and this person that we have to, you know, deal with get safe. I don't want to be completely honest with you. I hope I never, ever, ever, ever have to pull out my firearm. Pray to God, in my 30-year career, I hope I never have to pull it out once. Not even use it, pull it out. So, and that's just how I feel. I've told you know, my family, friends, all this stuff. I'm terrified to use it. I don't want to have to do that. I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot to that.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's one thing you said, but Amani, I'm going to give you the floor. I think there's one thing you said, you were talking about, just because you have a bit more knowledge about cops and their procedures, that you're not necessarily as frightened. And I hope that through this conversation that we are having now, that we do have a bit more knowledge about cops and their procedures.
Can I say something to that? When I was at the police college, there's about 500 so officers from all over Ontario. And I could say that almost all of them that I've interacted with, seen interactions, watched scenarios, they're all decent people. Things that happen, those cops that do things towards black people and racialized people and just others, I don't, and maybe I'm going out of term saying this, I don't think they wake up in the morning saying that I'm going to go hunt down a black person. I do think, though, it's in their heart that if the situation arises, then they don't hold back or are thoughtful. They just act instead of taking that extra second to think.
So, I mean, like, these things are happening, right? And you know, the world is on fire and people are talking about not like a cop here and a cop there. Mm-hmm. They're talking about a systemic, like it's enrooted in mm-hmm. the power structure of mm-hmm. what the police force is. So, you know, you as an individual, you know, Eddie's my brother. I wouldn't have a problem sitting down in the same area with you because, you know, there's that person to person. Also, you know, you're young and you're black. I'm sure that you understand certain things, but you know, we're not necessarily talking about you as an individual. And, you know, I know it's hard for you to speak on behalf of a structure, but there is something systemic that's happening. That's not unique to the United States. That's not unique to Canada. It's a worldwide problem whereby police systems are being used to oppress people and specifically, people of color. And here in Canada, it's black and it's indigenous. We see the numbers mm-hmm. for carding. You know, black people like 75% more likely to be carded. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? And these numbers aren't just with the police force. It's with the government that supports them. It's with the funding that comes with the police as well. So, you know, obviously in your personal experience, it looks very different. But almost every black person that I know has had a disruptive experience with the police. And sure. I think that we need to address that. I don't think that, you know, defending the police is one thing, but, you know, there is something going on and that's mm-hmm. why Eddie invited you. So I, you know, hopefully we can sort of redirect our conversation to, you know, what is the problem and what is happening internally to deal with it. Sorry, I know other people had some questions, but this is BPR, guys. This is Speak On It. You guys need to stop being so polite.
Hi, Amani. Okay. Hop in, please. Please.
Okay. So I had a two-part question. So the earlier you said that cops in the state are different than here in Canada. And I totally agree with that. You are different. And we also have different problems. Like, for example, I know here in Canada, we have a major gun violence problem. And so we do know that there are a lot of racial profiling in these cases, especially when you live in low income areas and neighborhoods and stuff. Yeah. And so a lot of those cases, especially for racialized people, I know this from experience since I've talked to a lot of mothers who have lost their kids to gun violence. A lot of their cases have been dropped. So I've been wondering exactly what factors are put in when thinking of dropping like those type of cases.
So I've been doing the job for almost 2 years now. I am a third class constable. Mm-hmm. I have no say in when something like that major gets dropped or mm-hmm. what happens down the line. Sometimes there's just not enough evidence to proceed with something. Sometimes we have exhausted every single, and when I say we, this is from conversations I've had with detectives, because usually in homicides or major events, detectives will come take it over. They have experience. They're trained for it. I'm not trained for that. I would love to tag along and learn and, you know, be a fly on the wall, be support, but I'm not trained for that. They take it over and you're usually not involved ever. They don't tell you the result of it. You have to do your own queries after the fact to figure out what happened. Someone got arrested. Someone got charged.
Okay. All right. So, my other question is, so when you basically said people are aggressive towards cops. So like basically we can say that Canadian cops are not the same as American cops, but the whole reason why like people are afraid of cops, I think, is because there's no communication within the communities. So have like maybe here in Hamilton, I know about Toronto, but here in Hamilton, is there like really any dialogue between the cops and communities, meaningful dialogue, especially like during this time?
So I can't speak on Hamilton Police Force. Waterloo, I know they're very active on social media, on their Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, I believe too. But I don't know what type of conversations that you are like. I know you're looking for what's like what's happening directly with what's going on right now.
Not really. Just like as in, because there is a lot of fear of police. Yep. No one really can like sit down like they're doing now. I don't think I've seen many people like sit down and really have a conversation like this. So have you seen like even like where you are, like communities actually talking to the police and trying to dispel fears?
Yeah, I know before COVID, so pre-COVID, there's a lot of community groups that come to, I work in North Division, so I'll say North for the sake of this, to come to North to have, we have a community room, conference room, whatever. And there, we have people that are specified to have these conversations with people. We have like school resource officers that they talk to, they work in tandem with the schools and the parent councils and that sort of thing. We have community resource officers that work in tandem with community housing, some of the homeless shelters, that sort of thing. I don't work every day with them. I use them as my resources, but I don't work every day with them. We have Canadian Mental Health, we have Victim Services, all these things that we work in tandem with. And I think I'm kind of going off on a tangent off your question. Can you give me the question one more time? I apologize.
So the question is, what steps should the police like take to really talk with the community, and have you guys really had any meaningful dialogue?
So I do think those conversations are happening. I know that there's often information sessions. That's kind of what made me privy to becoming a police officer. I went to an information session where it was a 2.5-3 hour event where everybody, candidates, not candidates, people that are interested, they come into the police station and they have constables, active constables, road constables coming and giving their perspectives and talking to people. I remember that was something that after those conversations happened, I remember that same night, I was just like, you know what? I want to do it. This is where I want to work. And I was able to get excited and energized about that job. They don't happen every week. They don't happen every month. Policing were incredibly understaffed. So there's times where we have to do that. I know that I've been sent to events outside of work for Waterloo Regional Police. Last year I went to the Black Officers Association. It was an event. There are other community events that happen like Victoria Park, which is similar to Gage Park in Hamilton, where we have officers go and we set up our own booth. And we have these conversations with people. So it's not something happening every day, but I think that if you look for it and you seek it and you inquire about having those conversations, like if you were to email a constable, somebody would direct you to the right person, I would hope, and you'd be able to have whatever conversation. I would hope that if you wanted to talk to a Hamilton police officer, you could walk into their division and say, hi, I'm from Eddie. Forgive me for this. What's this group called?
BPR.
BPR. I'm from BPR. I want to have a conversation with constable and active on duty constable about what's going on. I'm sure that somebody would try to make the arrangements. I would think that's the case because I know something like that will most likely happen up in Waterloo. So I think the conversations are there to be had, but
but police officer, let's see it that way. He wants his salary, he wants it, so he put on a badge and kill people for it. My grandfather had a deal with the cops. My great-grandfather dealt with the cops. My great-grandfather had a deal with the cops. And then my great-great-great-great, when is gonna stop? Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
CIOI 101.5 The Hawk.
This is Beatles Mania on 101.5 The Hawk. Sponsored by Beatles Magazine. Get Beatles news 24 hours a day, 8 days a week. Go to BeatlesMagazineUK.com for the latest info.
With love from me to you.
Beatles Mania is now on the air.
On the air.
Beatles Mania for September 12th, 2020 is now on the air. I'm Kyle Slaz, and we have a great show ahead of us for this Saturday afternoon. Full two-hour show of live Beatles tracks and solo live Beatles tracks. Bunch of interviews as well as two featured artists. We're going to get this show started off right now with the Beatles live at the Hollywood Bowl. She's a Woman here on 101.5 The Hawk.